I'm Matt, and I'm thrilled to be your host. In this podcast, I'll be diving deep into the world of automotive and motorsport engineering, exploring the inspiring careers of the engineers who fuel the heart of this industry. From the roar of race cars on the track to the cutting-edge innovations in electric vehicles, our goal is to connect you with the minds that drive it all forward. Each episode will bring you engaging conversations with leading engineers, designers and innovators from across the industry. We'll uncover their personal stories, career paths, and the challenges they've experienced along the way. Whether you're a seasoned engineer, an aspiring student, or just a car enthusiast, there's something here for everyone. Join us as we explore the future of mobility. This podcast is your backstage pass to the stories and insights that define the careers of those who make the world move. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure to subscribe, leave us a review, and share the episode for anyone who has a passion for engineering and a love for automotive. Without further ado, I'm going to introduce our very first guest on the podcast. Born in Argentina, our guest today is a distinguished mechanical engineer and motorsport designer. His early career involved working in Formula 2 vehicles in Argentina before moving to England. Here he designed successful Formula Ford cars for PRS and later contributed to notable F1 teams, including RAM, Williams and Brabham. His career continued at Dallara and he worked later in the US with All American Racers and in Europe with 40, Opel, Benetton and Sauber. His consultancy firm has been instrumental in various racing projects, including pioneering work on electric race cars and simulation technologies. Not only that, he also contributes to academia, enhancing student skills at Oxford Brookes University with advanced simulation software and motorsport. It's my pleasure to welcome, as our first guest on the podcast, Sergio Rinland. Hello, Sergio.
Hello, Matt. It's a pleasure to be with you here, and I guess it's an honor to be the first interviewed in your podcast series.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for joining us. We're going to dive straight in, if that's okay, Sergio. So we've got lots of questions that we want to ask you today. Yeah. First question is just kind of just going to be around your personal career journey, really. What sparked your interest in motorsport and engineering?
Well, since I got memory, since I was a little kid, I was passionate and inspired by cars. And I like cars, I love cars, and racing is obviously an extension of cars. And since I got memory, I wanted to be involved in cars, in any kind of situation that I remember.
Great. Great. Can you tell us about your educational background and how it prepared you for a career in Formula One?
Yeah, I mean, when I was, when I finished primary school at 12 years old, I already knew what I wanted to do. And I pushed to have a technical education. So at high school, I went to a technical school that in Argentina still is the system there, where you have in the morning you have theoretical lectures like in a normal secondary school, high school, and then the afternoon was a workshop. So they had full workshops in the school, starting with foundries, with machine tools, with hand tools, carpentry, electricity, and there were 6 years there where as a sort of a final project, we used to put together a car, a complete car, with a chassis and engine and the whole thing. So we have to, during the 6 years, be participants in every single aspect from the foundry. I mean, we even had a foundry at the university, at that school. And so that was my secondary education. And went from there, I went to university, and obviously my aim was to study mechanical engineering because I wanted to design cars, racing cars. So sort of I sort of been following all the steps to achieve what I wanted to achieve as a young aspiring motorsport engineer.
That's great. That's perfect. Thanks, Sergio. Were there any significant challenges that you faced in your early, sort of around those school, university times that that you faced, and how did you overcome any of those challenges?
No, I think the only challenge I had is that motorsport in those days in Argentina was sort of not viewed as a sort of a mainstream industry or as a mainstream profession as such. And my father was a civil engineer. He had his own practice there, and he sort of had the opinion that motorsport was not what he wanted for his son. So my first challenge was actually to convince him that what I wanted to do was a worthwhile profession.
What did your father want you to do instead?
Well, he just wanted me to have a more sort of mainstream profession, like sort of be involved either in engineering, but in mainstream engineering or something to do with economics or things like that, but not motorsport as such. Motorsport was not viewed as a proper profession as such. I'm talking about the 1950s.
Sure. So tell us about your first job in motorsport then. What was your first role?
Well,
my first proper role, shall we say.
I was still at university, and one of my professors, the one who used to teach us physics, he was a motorsport enthusiast. He was a designer in his own right, and he already had designed racing cars and had a workshop. And at one point, he had a manufacturing facility as well for other components like motorhomes and things like that. So, and he one day came to me in 1976. I was still in, I think it was third year university or fourth year university. And he said to me, listen, I've been asked to design and build a Formula Renault car, but I haven't got the time. So if you want, I can sort of tell him yes, but you have to do it. And I'll be there in the background to support you if you need to. Yeah, but I can't do it myself. So that was my first opportunity. So I sort of spent the whole summer going to his shop, designed this Formula Renault car, and with the help of his people there, built it, put it all together. We delivered it to the customer, and he went racing that car. I think he built three or four of those. So that was my first experience. And then when I finished university, I moved to Buenos Aires, and I went to work for Formula 2 teams. First of all, it was a private team, and then the second year, I was hired by the Chrysler Works team. So, that was sort of my initiation there. I spent 2 years in Argentina, and my aim always been to come to England to design Formula 1 cars. So I had a fixed idea and a sort of a straight path, what I wanted to do. So after 2 years of working there, I was fairly successful. I introduced ground effect to the cars there. I'm talking about the late 70s, so it was contemporary with what Lotus was doing here. And I designed the first ground effect Formula 2 car in Argentina, which was very successful. It was the fastest car in 1980, I think it was. And then after that, at the end of that year, end of 1980, I came to England with a one-way ticket.
And you haven't looked back?
I just went back as a visitor.
That's great. So how's the role of an engineer evolved and changed since you started?
Enormously.
I appreciate there's a lot, but what's the most significant changes, would you
say?
Well,
I mean, just to give you an idea, I mean, I have a degree in engineering, which in Argentina was an equivalent between a master's degree in the UK and a PhD, because we used to do, we had to do a thesis and a project. So, and that took us a year. So that was what, more or less what today we do for a PhD level. They didn't have that name there. So my education was sort of very sort of high level. And I came to England. Obviously my first job was with PRS, as you mentioned, designing Formula Ford cars. But they didn't hire me as a designer. They hired me as a mechanic, because they had two drivers, an Argentinian and a Mexican, and they needed a mechanic to speak Spanish. So my skills there were not my engineering skills, were the fact that I could speak Spanish. And after the first test, I pointed out a few things in the car, a few things that were not going to work, and then eventually didn't work. So they sort of starting to pay some attention. This kid may know something. And then I helped them to set up the car and to modify it and so on. So eventually, when we came back from one test, Vic Holman, the owner of the team, said, well, do you know how to draw? And I said, yes, of course I know how to draw. And I said, okay, well, from tomorrow, you're going to be our designer. Forget about being a mechanic. I mean, obviously, I wasn't a very good mechanic. Yeah, I was slow. I was good. I didn't make mistakes, but I was too slow for their taste, which is understandable. So that's how I came to design the PRS cars for a few years. And then when PRS went into financial difficulties, Ron Tarnack actually admired one of my Formula Ford 2000 designs, and he called me, and when he found out that PRS was in financial difficulties, he called me to the bed and breakfast I used to leave, and he offered me a job to work in his Formula 3 and Formula 2 teams. So that's sort of how my career evolved. And then one day I was at the Brands Hatch for a Formula One race, visiting, and I knew some of the people in Formula One already from the Temporadas in Argentina. And I met with Jeff Hazel, who at the time was the team manager at Williams. And he said, what are you doing? And I told him what I was doing, that I was working at Rolt. And he said, yeah, but you told me once in Argentina you wanted to work in Formula One. I said, of course, that's my aim. So I'm hoping to get to Formula One one day. He said, come with me. So he took me on the pit lane, went to the other end of the pit lane. There was Williams was on one end, Ramp was on the other end, and he introduced me to John McDonald. And he said, John, this is a young engineer from Argentina. You need to employ this guy. And that was it.
Wow.
So John said, okay, come on Monday for an interview. Yeah. And so I went the following Monday, went for an interview with John McDonald. And I went there with my thesis, a book that I wrote for my thesis and all the drawings of the car I designed. Because my thesis was a design of a Formula 2 car with a monocoque chassis and a software vehicle dynamic simulations. I'm talking about the late 70s when I did that. The university was the university had one computer, which was the size of a house. Yeah, just to give you an idea. And I was granted access to that computer to design my software for my thesis. So I went with all that material to see John McDonald, and we sat there. In the offices were John McDonald, it was Guy Edwards, who used to look after his sponsorship deals. And then he sort of let me talk for about 10 or 15 minutes, and I showed him my drawings and my book, and I told him about my education and blah, blah, blah. And he sort of, he sort of nodded, and then eventually when I stopped talking, he said, can you draw? And I said, yes, of course I can draw, yeah. Oh, okay, if you can draw, you got the job. So he went from here out of there, didn't process all what I told him, all what he was interested in, is that I could draw, if I can make drawings, yeah, draw parts, then you got a job. In those days, I'm talking about the early 80s, engineers in Formula One were very few with actually a degree of engineering. I mean, Patrick Head was one. You had Gustav Brunner was another one with a degree in engineering. But the sort of the great majority of designers were people with the NHD degree and design sort of draftsmen. And they had an apprenticeship in either Rolls-Royce or one of the engineering, big engineering firms in the UK. And that was enough to get into Formula One. Nowadays, if you don't have a PhD, you're not going to get into Formula One.
No. What was it like, Sergio, coming from Argentina and moving to England at that time?
It was hard. It was hard because, it was a new country with a new culture, a language which, even though I study English in Argentina, it wasn't my first language. I could sort of express myself. I could read and write, but then I have to accustom my ear to understand what people were talking. And I always tell the story that when I came to England, my first port of was Norfolk. I went to live near Snetterton. So that's where I had to learn how to understand English. Yeah. And if you know, Norfolk people, it's got a very sort of hard English accent, you know. So if you understand English in Norfolk, then you can understand English anywhere else. And that's where I learned my first ropes in English. So, and the reason I went there is because, first of all, I wanted to work for Lotus. That was my dream, was to work for Colin Chapman. Which I didn't manage, but I helped a Formula 3 team there with an Argentinian driver that came together with me, and he was my driver in Argentina in the Formula 2 team in Chrysler where I worked. And so when he came to race in Formula 3 here, my first, let's say, job, if you want to call it, he was to help him and engineer him and help him getting along with the Formula 3 championship. So that's where we went to live in Norfolk. So it was hard. Money was very short. I didn't have a lot of that. And in fact, when the PRS offered me a job as a mechanic, all what I had left in my pocket was £30, a car and a computer, sort of a mini computer I bought when I came to this country, and I bought an old banger there. And that's all, those were all my possessions. So if I didn't have that job, which Steve and Vic Holman offered me, I don't know how would I survive another week.
So yeah, it was hard. Must have been quite tough, quite difficult. Yeah.
And then I lived for 2 years or 3 years in bed and breakfast or rooms in houses and things like that until I could afford to rent a flat. So those the first few years were hard, I have to say. And the winters. The winters were hard.
Can you discuss a significant design or innovation that you've contributed, Sergio, either in Formula One or motorsport or anything that you can think of that your
was
idea?
Attributed to me, and that, yes, I was instrumental in the Sauber twin keel, yeah, which was just a way of clinging the front aerodynamics of the car. But there were a lot more innovations in the Fond Metal, a car that I did when after Brabham stopped racing, and I set up Astauto, my own company. And the first job we did, I mean, when I sort of put together a team of engineers, we designed a Formula One car for Fond Metal. And I was joined by Hans Fouché, an aerodynamicist, my aerodynamicist at Brabham. He was a genius. And between him and me, we sort of put a lot of innovations in that von Mettel car. I mean, one of them were what we used to call the side channels. I mean, today, even in road cars you have, or sports cars, you have the sides coming in and then created like a sort of a small channel underneath. I mean, every Formula One car now is like that, every Formula Two car. That was an innovation. That was an innovation that we came out with after our research in the Brabham Wind Tunnel. So we did a lot of research in the Brabham Wind Tunnel. Then Brabham closed down. We set up Astauto and we created this car. So we use all our knowledge that we did that researching in the Wind Tunnel, which, funny enough, is what the Wind Tunnel we used to do the von Mettel, because the Wind Tunnel was purchased by Yamaha, and Yamaha rented the Wind Tunnel to us. So for us, it was seamless. You know, we carry on with the same Wind Tunnel, same equipment, same personnel, everything. And those side channels, I think it was an innovation that we created, and it took another 10 years. This was 92, and it took until 2002 for Ferrari to come out with these sort of side channels, which basically reversed the vortex on the side of the side pod to allow air not to go underneath the floor and create a little bit more vacuum. So that was our thinking, but it didn't caught up for another 10 years, mainly because the von Mettel was not a leading car. People don't tend to copy cars that are not leading, yeah, that are not winning. And that car only did 7 races until the team sort of folded. So we couldn't really even explore more or further that aerodynamic system. And then when I went to Sauber, which was 10 years later, obviously I applied a lot of my own thinking in that car. And that was sort of, I would say, if you want to call it, my contribution.
Just moving on, and we're going to get a lot of people listening to this that are aspiring to be within motorsport or Formula One. And I know you work with a lot of students already through Oxford Brookes. But what skills and experience are absolutely crucial for those wanting to find a career in motorsport or Formula One?
I mean, Formula One now, the role that you asked me earlier, how the role changed from when I joined Formula One 40-odd years ago and now. Now, the sort of, just to give you an idea, the Ram 02 was designed between 3 people. It was Gustav Brunner, it was Tim Fiest that came later in the project to help us to draw the suspension components, and myself. I did all the composites, the chassis, the bodywork, all that, just one person. Gustav did design a complete gearbox. And all the engine installation and the concept of the car. So just imagine, we were only 3 people and we did it in 4 months. That was it.
Wow.
You know, the car ran. After 4 months, we draw the first line. Nowadays, you have just aerodynamic engineers in a team are about, in you count in hundreds, yeah, just for the aero, and let alone all the other disciplines. And engineers are sort of specialists. Every engineer is a specialist in a small part, in a small component of the car. And it's very difficult to sort of to gain a broad view of the whole car.
Sure.
These days.
Yeah.
In my days, you had to know the whole car because that's where you were working in the whole car. One year you designed the monocoque, the next year you designed the gearbox. And, you know, when I moved to Williams, which it was a top team and we won the World Championship in 97 with the Williams, with the FW11, we were only 7-8 people, including Patrick Head. So the speciality was more ample than now. Now they tend to specialize. So my advice to a young engineer is to have the best possible education they can. Make sure they don't neglect vehicle dynamics is paramount. Aerodynamics is paramount to know. Yeah. And with the engineering degree will come the knowledge on materials, on design, on stress analysis. But the thing they need to make sure that they have an understanding and a good knowledge is vehicle dynamics and aerodynamics. Yeah. Because those are the two core disciplines that makes the performance of the car. So yeah, that sure. knowledge is going, and that knowledge is going to allow them to progress in the career. Yeah. And never stop studying. Never. You know, don't stop learning. Well, you never can stop learning, but don't stop studying and researching. Yeah. You have to dedicate a few hours a day just to research and study. I mean, I still do it today. Yeah. After my long career, and I spent a lot of time researching and studying the subjects that I'm or my interest or the specialization or the work that I have to do these days. So that's my advice: never stop studying, never stop learning and researching. Yeah, even if you are in a team that your job is to design from wishbones, yeah. Don't stay there. Yeah. You can carry on designing from wishbones, but allow your mind to learn a lot of other stuff. Yeah. That comprise a vehicle, a car. Yeah. That's what's going to make to progress in a career. Yeah. Don't close the mind.
It's really, really good advice. And it was my next question. I think you've pretty much answered it there, but my next question was going to be, you know, how important is continuous learning and staying updated with the industry requirements and advancements that there are, because obviously they bring in new regulations all the time, right? So you've got to make sure you're keeping yourself up to date and aware of what those changes are. But yeah, I mean, that's really interesting that, you know, even if you think you kind of know it all, to still go away and spend a couple of hours a day just researching more and understanding more. There's always things to understand. So really good advice.
When you go home, instead of sitting in front of the TV to watch something, go to your desk and research, go to and study and buy books and never stop learning, because that's what's going to make you progress in your career. So you have to have a passion, not only for motorsport, a passion for learning.
Really good, really good. So what is the, just moving on a little bit, but what is the most memorable project or car that you've worked on, Sergio, and why really? Obviously, you've worked for a lot of companies, lots of brands. There must be one car, I think I probably know which one it is, but there's probably one car that stands out in your mind.
One car that stands out, and that's the Ford Mentor. Funny enough, it's the car that did the least amount of kilometers, or the least amount of miles.
Really?
Racing miles, because the team was, if that car would have been the Brabham BT62, which it would have been, because the people who designed that car, I mean, my office, my first office, we were 10 people there, including my secretary and the purchasing department. So designing, we were only 7 people. We were all ex-Brabham. When Brabham closed down, I set up an office around the corner with where Brabham was at Chessington. So I rented an office there, and we all moved together. So that would have been the Brabham BT62. If that car would have been built and raised by Brabham and not by Fondmetal, it would have been a very successful car, because the team didn't have the resources. The team was in Italy. We designed and built the car in the UK. We used to send all the components in boxes. We used to, we rented a place in the Chessington factory that used to be Brabham, and then it was bought by Yamaha. We not only rented the wind tunnel, we rented the shop floor. we rented a place in the shop floor to put together the first prototype. So the mock-up of the car and the first prototype was built at the Brabant factory. Yeah. So, and if that car would have been a Brabham with people like sort of Charlie Whiting and Herbie Blash there on the running of the team, it would have been a different story. Yeah, but that's the car that we put a lot of innovation. We had very good ideas, and it was a very good car. I mean, even today when I meet the drivers. That were Eric van der Poel and Gabriele Tarquini, they still, today, they come and tell me that's the best racing car we ever drove. So that car that stands out. I mean, I was involved in other cars that were very good, like the Sauber. Yeah, that was a very successful car. Obviously, the Williams FW11 when I learned my first ropes. And the Brabham BT58 was a very, very good car as well. So, yeah, they were. But the Ford Metal is something, because it was created by sort of an office that I put together, and it was, I didn't have anyone to tell me, no, you can't do this. Yeah. We did that car, and yeah, it's probably my pride and joy.
That's brilliant. That's great. In your career, Sergio, have you had any mentors or anybody that you've looked up to that have particularly helped you at parts of your career?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't call it mentors, but I said that what Isaac Newton said, I managed to see further because I stood in the shoulders of giants. And I don't think they were mentors as such. But I was lucky enough that I worked for people like Gustav Brunner, Patrick Head, Gordon Murray, Rory Byrne, Ron Taranak. Never forget Ron Taranak. Yeah. And so I wouldn't say they were my mentors, but they were people I worked for. And even by just looking at them, you learn. I worked for Bernie Ecclestone. I worked for Frank Williams. I worked for Dan Gurney. So I was not only a privilege for me, I was lucky, I would say, that I managed to work for all those people. And from each one of them, I took enormous lessons and I learned a lot.
What was Bernie Ecclestone like to work with?
Not easy. But he was very straight, and one quality he always had was he was very loyal to his people. It wasn't easy, it was hard because you have to deal with someone of his personality, but he made it look normal. You know, when you say today, well, could you work for Bernie Ecclestone? I said, well, it's like working for God. But he made it like it was normal. Yeah. But in those days, the team owners or team principals were the owners of the team. They were very strong personalities. I mean, as I said, I worked for Frank Williams, worked for Bernie Ecclestone. Those people, you really, like I normally say that in my days, you didn't go and work for Williams Engineering, you were to work for Frank. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when you went to work for Brabham, you work for Bernie. You don't work for a company. Yeah. You work for a person, for a leader, someone who inspire you and give you that strength to follow. I think nowadays is very different because the teams are big corporations. You've got 500 to 800 employees. It's very, very different. Very different. Very corporate.
Yeah, that's good. If you could give one piece of advice then to your younger self, what would that be?
In my career, I was always very impatient, very sort of very forward. And sometimes I made mistakes. I made career mistakes by being not patient, by not waiting. But sort of thinking a little bit more about changes in my career. So, I mean, it didn't affect me much. Yeah, I don't dwell on those things. But, yeah, there were few mistakes that I made in my career that if I would have been a little bit more patient or a little bit more thinking, I would not have made them. But, you know, everybody makes mistakes and you have to learn from them.
That's good advice. That's really good advice. I've asked you about who you've worked with and who you worked for and alongside. Who's been your favourite driver across the years in the teams that you've worked for? Are there any drivers that really stand out?
Well, I work for very good drivers, yeah, and probably the most successful one was Mansell. Yeah, but I work for other drivers like I admire not only as a driver, but as a person. Yeah, I mean, I work for Martin Brundle, was one of my drivers, and I always admire his approach, not only to racing, but his approach to life. I work with drivers like Riccardo Patrese, who, again, I admire very much. So I don't have a favorite driver as such, yeah? They're all sort of fantastic people. And when you get to the level of Formula One, between the first and the last, yeah, they are all sort of a very way high step above everybody else. David Brabham is my friend today. I didn't give him the best Formula One car I designed. And we always joke about that when he drove for Brabham, that Brabham wasn't very successful for various reasons, yeah. But then again, we joined forces at Le Mans and we finished third in the GP. So, yes, I mean, I have very good experiences with all the drivers I work for. And everyone was different. And drivers are a very sort of a breed of human beings that are different than everybody else. And they have to be to do what they do.
That's great. Thank you. So we're going to try and wrap this up a little bit now. So I appreciate we've taken up quite a bit of your time, Sergio, but we've got just a couple more questions to go.
Yes.
One of them, what's your current or future projects and goals looking like? Appreciate you're doing some bits with the Oxford University. You've got your consultancy, very successful consultancy firm as well. What are you kind of looking to do now? Don't think you're going to put your feet up just yet. You don't seem the kind of guy that wants to just sort of sit still and not do anything. What are your plans?
Well, at the moment, I mean, as you mentioned, I teach race engineering and simulation at Oxford Brookes for the master's degree, which I've been doing this since 2016, I think. And I really enjoyed, thoroughly enjoyed being surrounded by young people. They keep me honest because I have to carry on learning and have to carry on sort of being a little bit ahead of the curve to make sure that they don't ask me questions I can't answer. Sometimes they do. And professionally, for the last 10 or 15 years, I've been working on the electrification. So I concentrate myself in the development of electric vehicles, and I develop sort of my personal skills into simulation, yeah, because simulation took over what we used to do for testing or research beforehand. So I took that discipline as my sort of my tool as such. And I've been working, as I said, in electric. I mean, I do a lot of consultancy, as you well know, for companies that develop electric vehicles, mainly startups, because they need some more broad knowledge of an automobile or a car. I've been lucky enough in my career to be able to have a holistic view of the car. And in the last, as I said, the last 10, 15 years, I learned a lot about electrification, electric motors, batteries, the electronics that goes with it and the control systems. So that's where I tend to sort of concentrate my engineering these days.
That's really good. Thank you. So a couple more questions to go, Sergio. One of them is do you have a particular favorite race or moment in motorsport or Formula One that really stands out in your mind?
Yes, Monaco 89. Without even thinking, Monaco 89 with the Brabham VT 58, we finished third. We were going third and fourth at the time. And Martin Brundle had a problem in his car where the battery came loose underneath his legs. So he had to stop, get out of the car, mechanic fixed the battery, he jumped in and he finished fifth. But Stefano Modena, who was going fourth at the time, he inherited the third place. And he finished third, and he was catching up. That race was won by Senna. Yeah, the two McLarens were first and second. And I remember my Brabhams, my little Brabhams, were actually catching Prost in the McLaren. So
amazing.
That stand out of my favorite race. And not only that, the year before I designed the Dallara. Yeah, but because it was a sabbatical, we had a Brabham where Brabham didn't participate in Formula One. And I went to design the Dallara F1 car, and the Dallara finished fourth. So my cars, in inverted commas, finished third, fourth, and fifth in the Monaco Grand Prix in 1989. So, that race stands out, certainly.
Did you meet Ayrton Senna?
Yes. I mean, when I moved to when I came to England and went to Norfolk, we set up a workshop for this Formula 3 team in the Snetterton circuit, and Ayrton was driving for Van Diemen. He was driving for Van Diemen in Formula 4, and they used to test nearly every day at Snetterton, where we used to have our workshop. And we used to test our Formula 3, so we used to meet a lot. And we were like a group of South Americans living there. You had the Mexican drivers, Argentinian drivers, Brazilian drivers. They were all living around that area in Norfolk because most of them were driving for Formula 4. Yeah, and Van Diemen was the heart of Formula 4. So we were like a little South American club there, and Ayrton was part of it. Was a sort of a shy part of it. He didn't participate in all the fun things we used to do, but he was there, and he stood up even at very early days as the man to follow. And then when he moved to Lotus, and I moved to Brabham. We both started Formula One the same year, in 1984. He drove for Toleman with a Hart engine and Pirelli tires, and I went to design for Ram with Hart engine and Pirelli tires. So we had a lot of things in common. When he moved from Toleman to Lotus, and because he was driving for before that, when he drove in Formula 3 for West Surrey Racing, who's down the road here, he used to live in Isher. Just round the corner with my house here. So I can walk 50 meters and be in the house where Ayrton used to live with Mauricio Wigelin, his best friend. So we used to meet in the village. Yeah, I was working at Brabham. He was racing at Lotus before he even came to race for McLaren. He was living here. Yeah.
Wow. So that's incredible. That's an incredible insight.
Yes, I got a lot of fond memories and of our encounters and talks and things like that, which for me, you know, if you talk to me about who is the driver, I never worked with him. Yeah, I wish I would, but he was a driver that was way above everybody else, way above, you know, in every sense. Yeah, in every sense. So I got very fond memories from him. I wish I would have worked with him as an engineer and a driver.
It's amazing insights. Thank you, Sergio. I'm just going to finish up with one last question for you. And If you've got any final words of wisdom or encouragement for listeners, we've gone through what, you know, skills we think they should have and what they need to break into Formula One. But any kind of final words of wisdom or encouragement that you would give to anybody listening that wants to work within the world of motorsport or Formula One?
There is only one recipe, and the recipe is hard work. Yeah. Emile Zola said once, this French philosopher, he said, you cannot get to succeed in art or what he was doing. You need to have the gift, yeah. But the gift is worth absolutely nothing if you don't come together. If it doesn't come together with hard work, yeah. So you can have the gift. Yeah, you can be a very, very clever, very talented engineer, yeah, or even talented driver for the same token. But if you don't accompany that and you put that together with hard work, you're not going to get anywhere. Yeah, skill alone, talent alone is not enough. Hard work is what takes you. And if you don't have the top talent, yeah, but you have the capability to learning and hard work, that will take you further in your career than someone with a lot of talent, but a little bit lazy. Don't be lazy.
It's great advice, and good advice in general as well, I think.
Yeah, for everything. It's not just Formula One or engineer or whatever, you know, in any discipline, yeah, you have to supplement your talent with hard work.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sergio, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. And I'm sure our listeners feel exactly the same as well. Nothing left for me to do other than to say thank you, wish you well. Please stay in contact. We'd love to have you back again in the future. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, Matt, for giving me this opportunity. And thank you always to your company, Matchtech, because in the last few years, it's been helping me to sort of to further my career in the automotive industry. So, it's a two-way thank you here.
You're very welcome and an absolute pleasure. Take care, Sergio.
Thank you very much. See you soon. Bye-bye.